Hey guys, you're in for a real treat today because on the show, I have Jason Davies and Abby Pirana from the OT Schoolhouse. Jason and Abby are both school-based occupational therapists, and I actually met them at the Occupational Therapy Association of California conference just a couple months ago. They run the OT Schoolhouse website, blog, and podcast, and they have some fantastic stories to share with you today. We have just the best time discussing everything school-based occupational therapy. I hope you enjoy this episode, and class is officially in session.
If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life.
Hello.
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 Well, this is exciting.
This is so fun. Okay, so I was watching the conversation that you guys were just typing on Skype. And of course, all I read was like, you didn't have to put the beans in the washer. And so I'm like, wait, okay, beans. I'm like, maybe she's like washing like a weighted blanket or like some sort of like beanbag thing. Because I was like, yeah, school-based. Yeah, okay, it's got to be something like that.
Be anything.
It's got to be literal beans and sewn into something.
Because
or just clearly. Random beans just thrown into the dryer. Or,
like the sensory
bin. It could have been.
It's dirty. Toss it in.
You know what? It probably wouldn't surprise me if I found beans in my dryer at the end of doing laundry. I found googly eyes, stickers, glitter, like. Lots of things.
Yeah, putty. Usually putty's in the clothes. Yeah,
small buttons. Container Play-Doh.
You found that?
Well, because I don't check my pockets a lot. I should probably do that more.
Wait. What kind of pocket has a small container of Play-Doh in it?
Sometimes I'll stick it in my back jeans pocket. I wear stretchy jeans. I've done this before.
Stretchy jeans.
Believe me. It usually only went through the wash, though, and then I found it before it got to the dryer.
Well, that's good.
Actually, when I say usually, it didn't happen more than once. It happened one time, and then I was like, oh, my God.
The second time you caught it before it went in the wash.
Yeah. No. It only ever happened once, and I caught it before it went.
The longer you know Abby, the more crazy stories you will hear.
Yeah, Jason was in the office with me for a long time. Sorry.
No, I think that's something that most pediatric therapists and probably other therapists, we find just like random stuff in our laundry all the time that we forgot about. I just find stickers like everywhere. And I'll be like, where did that come from? I haven't even had these stickers in like 6 months and it was just like magically appear somewhere. And I guess we should clarify that it was the dog and not just random beans. So your dog's name is Beans or the Beans?
Yeah.
Beanie.
Beanie.
Beans for short.
Sometimes I call her Weenie when she's being a jerk.
Weenie, Beanie.
Beanie, Weenie.
Beanie, Weenie.
Beanie, Weenie.
And sometimes the Beans.
The sometimes. Beans, yeah.
Well, now I know. I was a little worried. I was like, what is going on? What kind of beans is she putting in the washing machine or the dryer right now? And I guess it makes sense because it was raining too. So dog could be a little wet.
She likes to take a tumble. Just air, no heat.
Right.
Fluff the fur.
Exactly. So do you guys have a funny story? I know you have to have a funny story. Abby's got one.
I do.
Abby always has something funny going on. So what's going on, Abby?
Oh, gosh. So I have this kiddo, and maybe you guys will find this funny, but he has autism. And I work with him individually, and he usually doesn't, like, he was a pretty big stinker when I first started working with him, and now he's fully on board with the OT train. Like, he gets super excited. Whenever I come to get him from class, he gets really pumped. And this week, I went to go pick him up, and he was eating his snack, because I usually see him on Fridays, but I have a meeting that's going to take up that time, so I thought, well, I'll go grab him early, so it was outside of our scheduled time. So he was eating snack and his aide told him, he was like, OT. And he said it and he had a mouthful of goldfish and he was super pumped about it. And he's like, OT. And the aide was like, no, you have to finish eating before you can go. And instead of finishing eating, he went and spit it
out. Oh, God. Just spit it all out.
And tossed it on his placemat and, like, brushed his hands off and walked
away. Okay.
I'm done eating.
I'm not waiting. Like, I'm not chewing this food. I'm spitting it out. That takes far too much time.
That is fantastic.
Grabbed his glasses. He was covered in spitty goldfish. And we went to OG.
Oh, that sounds like a fun session.
And I was like, oh my God, this kid. But he, like, at first it was always, nope, nope, nope. That's the only word I heard. Now he's just like, all on board for OT, comes to OT, loves OT, to the point where he spit out his snack because he couldn't afford the time to chew it and swallow.
Were they the multicolored goldfish?
No, just regular. Oh. Just like the fact that he was like,
And my guess is that goldfish is probably one of his preferred foods too. So the fact that he ditched goldfish for OT, I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like I felt like I had won because I will tell you, he used to run away, like all kinds of nonsense in the beginning of the year. To say nope, and then he'd run off. Now he's like, OT. I gotta get out of here.
Oh, that story just puts my story to shame, but I'll tell it anyway. I went to do an eval on Monday, and it wasn't the kid that I was evaling. There were the two siblings were there, both older, and the oldest sibling really wanted my attention like the entire time. The middle one was like totally distracted with something else. And then the one that I'm supposed to be working with was just kind of like, what's going on? I don't get it, guys. Mm-hmm. And the older one is behind me at this point. And all of a sudden, I just feel like his head in my back. And I'm just like, oh, I think I know what's going on. Wiping his boogers all on my back. Yeah.
That's one thing I don't do, boogers.
Back boogers. Yeah. It's awesome.
Back boogers. You can't even, you're just spinning in circles trying to find it. Like there's no, you're just like, get it off of me. Get it off of me. Like I would panic. Like that's disgusting. I am so sorry. But that's hilarious / super gross because that's the one thing that grosses me out. Boogers. I could deal with every other thing, but boogers, but
like,
man.
I mean, once he got me, like, what could you do? I was already like, all right, well, like, it can't get worse. I mean, I guess it can, but.
Yeah.
Did you, like, send your back? You're like, oh, he got me. I know it's there.
Keel over. Okay. I'm done.
It can always get worse.
I'm done. Can't do it.
All right, top that, Jason.
Bring it.
I've got nothing.
Nothing happened with the rain today.
Yeah, forging rivers today, man.
It was forging rivers today. No, but
I dunked both feet.
Not too much. What? You what?
Jason, tell the story. This is one of my favorite stories because we used to work together. He told me this really funny story in Adelanto once.
Oh my gosh. So, Sarah, we had these kids who they're nonverbal. You know, this is a moderate to severe disabilities classroom, anything from more severe autism to cerebral palsy and intellectual disabilities. There were a few different levels. Some kids had some increased skills as far as, you know, IQ was a little higher, but other kids were just really low. And so if this is for the podcast, I'm sorry, you won't be able to see it. But what the kids would do is they would smile at each other and they would give each other a thumbs up. And so they would wait for another kid in the class to give them the thumbs up. And then as soon as the other kid gave them a thumbs up, they put on like a really mad face and change it to a thumbs down. And it was just like their way of joking with each other. Like they were just like punking on each other with thumbs up and then nope, thumbs down. And so we had one kid who he was the one who would start it. And he thought it was the most hilarious thing in the world. Until someone would do it to him. And then he just like had a meltdown. He's like, what? Why are you giving me the thumbs down? And so it was a big thing, you know, the teacher had to take care of it. And it just shows, man, that it doesn't matter what level kids are. They just want to have fun.
Yep, but don't exactly. Dish it out if you can't take the heat.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Lesson learned.
But yeah, it was just hilarious, man. You just turn, I'd see a kid giving another kid a thumbs up, and then all of a sudden I turned back into the thumbs down. I was like, what the heck's going on?
Got my approval?
Nope.
Exactly.
So I want to ask you guys, what would you say the best part of being a school-based occupational therapist is?
The best part of being a school-based therapist is actually a little bit of the autonomy. I mean, we are typically, there's only one school-based OT at a given school. And so we kind of have, it's kind of a win-lose type of thing, because we want that ability to work with other therapists. But sometimes it's also kind of nice being the therapist there at that school and having the ability to work with all the teachers and the kids, not have to worry about sharing a space. But
okay, preschooler.
At the same time, it's also the, it's also the worst thing about OT school bases, because there is no one there to really bounce ideas off of. And that's what's so cool about not only this podcast, but when we have a chance to meet up at conferences and stuff like that. You know, the breaks aren't bad either. You know, having Christmas break, summer break, that ain't bad either. But yeah.
I think that's interesting, because I guess I feel the same way, and not even being in school based, but I'm out by myself all the time. And it's a pro and a con, because part of you is like, yeah, this is awesome, I get to do my thing. And then part of you is like, wait, but where's everybody else?
Yes.
Yeah. And I used to love my drives from one school to another school. Just that little time to kind of reflect on what you just did with a student at another school before you have to start up with another kid at a new school. Listening to a podcast or something, that was kind of nice. But as far as really being in there, my favorite part is actually working with the teachers and trying to kind of get that aha moment with the teachers about a specific kid with a diagnosis or something like that too.
Substitute caregiver with teacher. And I'm right there with you.
Yep. Exactly. So Abby, what about you?
Oh, so for me, let's see. So I've worked in other settings. So I've worked in skilled nursing. I've also worked in a long-term acute care where it was like a vent unit / long-term wound healing. And so, because I started in schools, then I took a brief couple year break where that's, and I've done home health. So I've done those different settings. And then I returned to schools after taking like a hiatus from them. So I would say what brought me back is I kind of come from a background of teachers. So my grandmother was an art teacher, was my personal elementary school art teacher, actually. And then my mother is a high school English teacher. And then my sister is a special ed teacher. And so I kind of come from this background of educators. And I personally wanted to be an art teacher when I first started looking at applying to colleges and universities. And I even shadowed my grandma for a couple years just in understanding art. Not shadowed her in schools. I think just my senior year, I was able to shadow her for a day. So I learned a lot of art stuff from her. And so for school-based, for me, it's really looking at the therapeutic aspects of doing activities. So I love breaking down activities and then looking at how that's going to promote functional skills within the classroom. And so I really like the younger kids. I really like doing projects with the younger kids. I love these little moments where maybe they didn't pick up on an activity in the past, or they were unmotivated to do something. And then I can find like that little something. So that's what I like about it. And I like bringing those activities into the classroom. So I do some small groups in classes where we do really creative projects. And then the teacher comes over and it's like, oh, how's that working with so-and-so, or how did you get him to cut that? And I can kind of share then with the teachers and the aides, you know, how OT is helping promote function through creative projects.
Yeah.
That's why I like school-based.
Yeah. One of the things at our old job when Abby and I were working together, we had a dollar store, Dollar General, one of those next door. And so, you know, we'd often like right next to the district office. Yeah. And so we actually had our office was at the district that we shared. And so oftentimes we would either stop as we left the district or on our way back to the district to pick up some, you know, crayons, some paint or whatever tool. And so many times Abby would walk into the office and she'd have a new toy, or I'd have a new toy, or our occupational therapy assistant would have a new toy. And we'd walk in and be like, look what I found.
It's like show and tell.
And then of course, yeah. Exactly. Yes. So of course, naturally, we had to open it and we had to test it out.
Yeah.
And so I specifically remember this one toy that Abby bought that had like a hammer with like cups. Do you know what the name of it was?
It's a whack-a-mole game.
Basically, yes. It's a whack-a-mole, yeah. But it's like whack-a-cup. Yeah. Like, yeah.
The color coded.
That's right.
I see it now. It's really motivating.
It's awesome. Yeah. We'll have to show you sometime. But basically, you have this little hammer with a cup at the end. And when you hit it over another cup, think about stacking cups. When you hit it over a cup, it gets stuck in the cup. And so you have like red, blue, green, yellow, and you have to hit them in the right order to get them to all stack up into the hammer.
Before your opponent.
Oh. Before your opponent can.
So then we got competitiveness here too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And her and I were going at it for like, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. You had to get all four stacked. And I think she had all four before I even had one time. And then she started cheating and she'd hit my cups instead of her cups. So I'd have to like reach over to try to get her cups.
You do what you gotta do to win, right?
You do. And actually, I still beat kids to this day. I'm very good at it now because when I play my students and I beat them, I get a sense of pride.
You get a sense of pride.
Do
you get a sticker?
I'll give myself stickers, but I grade the activity because personally, I do think it's important to like have kids lose sometimes.
Completely agree.
Because it's part of learning to cope with difficult situations. So at times I will beat kids and things. Yeah. Not all the time. We always end on a positive note.
At times, 90% of the time.
I won't continuously just beat them at that game, but I do. I have it now in the OT room. And I've actually set it up as part of a scooter board course where they have to try and get them while they're on the scooter board. So we do a lot of fun stuff with that. And it's sequencing. And then too, it's a lot of, so they have to look at the card. I flip the card. They have to do it as quick as possible. And so sometimes that has to do with scanning, tracking, motor coordination, eye-hand coordination. So you can really incorporate a lot with something. Best $5 I've spent in a long time.
Sounds like it. I've never seen it, but it would probably be way too challenging for most of my kids. And they'd probably just end up like hitting me or hitting like mom or dad instead.
Sometimes it's just a matter of, can they get the cup? Like one, we'll just get one.
That activity sounds just absolutely fantastic. And you guys are either going to have to like show me later or like send over a picture or something, because that's absolutely amazing.
You know what?
We have a video.
Yeah, I might be able to send you the video eventually of us playing it.
Please do. So how did you guys meet?
Adelanto. Jason interviewed me for a job there.
I did. That's the name of the district that we worked at. Adelanto Elementary School District is where we started working together. I had been there for a year or two before Abby came on, something like that. And so the program started up there with myself and our certified OTA. And then Abby joined us about 2 years later as our caseload continued to grow. And so we worked together for about 3 years up in Adelanto. And then we both kind of separated at the same time. We both left the district and went to other jobs. And now we both work for other school districts, actually neighboring school districts. But we obviously continue to do the OT Schoolhouse together. So yeah, that's kind of how we met. And it was a fun 3 years working together. And so we're keeping it going with the OT Schoolhouse.
And he's a tough interviewer.
I was the one who interviewed her for the job, well, along with the rest of the team, the special education team. So it was hard to get her on board. she was a tough cookie to crack because she was looking for the right job. And so I know in the OT world, you know, sometimes there's an OT shortage across the country, and school districts are kind of fighting over OTs right now in Southern California. And so right now you got to take what you can get, and you got to be able to put up the funds. You got to be on top of things. You got to be quick when it comes to hiring. Otherwise, they'll be gone. In fact, our district was just trying to hire three OTs And we ended up only hiring one because I think two of them accepted different positions. Mm-hmm. And so that's how quick it is. Like, people are moving.
I think that's interesting because I've had some new grads and I've had multiple people tell me that it's been difficult to find a job. But I know one specifically was wanted to go into like adults and skilled nursing. So I wonder if, I don't know, like, because it sounds like at least in schools, there's not enough people.
Yeah, there. And you know what? There really isn't enough people. But I do think it depends on the state and the type of district and where you're looking, because there's really highly desirable areas to live around California. And I would think that the more desirable area to live, it's probably a little bit more competitive. Like if you're looking in some rural place that is not a highly desired area, you're going to get less applicants. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine that the OTs would stay longer in those positions, because if you are from that area and you're looking to live there permanently, you're probably from the area. And so you're looking like a longer term. So that OT may likely stay with the same job for many years. So I think it would just be really dependent on that. Because I know in like Pennsylvania and like New York State, where I'm from originally, like East Coast, they're highly competitive. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to get a school-based job out there.
Interesting.
That's, and they pay a lot less than California. Mm-hmm. A lot less. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just talking, our most recent podcast was with Miss Jamie OT, Jamie Spencer.
I listened to that one
and
today.
She was saying, yeah, it was a good one. It was a good one. Oh my gosh. She is so passionate. She's so passionate about what she's doing. And it's all about advocacy, advocating for OTs. And she's kind of leading this advocacy project in New York, because it is crazy. Most of the OTs in New York are contracted. Very few are district employees. In Southern California, there's a big trend, it seems like, at least in Southern California, to go in-house, to have districts have their own occupational therapists. In New York City, it's like the complete opposite. It sounds like contractors are basically undercutting school districts. They are, they're just getting people for very low prices. I mean, they're not paying OTs a lot, but they have such a competitive hold, a stronghold on all the OTs. And so they're really fighting there. So like Abby was saying, it really depends on where you're at. I've heard even similar stories up north in Northern California that it's very contract based up there.
I've heard that too.
And so on the Facebook groups, you know, I'm telling people like, oh, well, down here, it seems like a lot of districts are hiring, and they're like, not up here. It's all contract. And so it is very dependent on where you're located. I'm sure, I think just about every occupational therapist gets an email monthly or a call from Florida or some random place.
Yeah, it seems like it's always Nevada.
I've gotten Nevada.
Colorado.
Colorado, mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's all the places where it's business friendly. Because I know Colorado and Florida are both very business friendly.
Yeah.
And so all the contract companies, they set up business there. They set up shop there. And that's why we get the phone calls from them asking us, hey, do you want to go work for a contract gig for 16 weeks in Hawaii? Or do you want to go work a school base for this year in Montana? I don't know. But yeah, it's very dependent on where you are, apparently.
Yeah, I feel like it's been more than that. It's probably been maybe five or 6 years since I've been in the schools. And I felt like a lot of them were contractors, and then there was a big push again in Southern California to do more in-house of the therapists. And so it sounds like that has been continuing, and there's maybe less. I mean, you guys know this better than I do. This is all like hearsay in my experience from years ago.
Well, like I can speak to when I've done contract work, because I actually was I did my first job out of school was a position in Hawaii where I worked for a contract company, and they, you know, set me up out there and whatnot. And then after that, I went and worked directly for the district. And then even initially here in California, when I first went back to school-based, I worked as a contractor. And part of the reason I did that was because part of getting into a district position is that you have to have letters of recommendation, and they almost have to come from a school district. But how do you get that unless you work as a contractor for at least a year? And so that's true. Sort of why I ended up in that position. But what I realized was the amount that they charge the district versus what they pay the therapist versus what you make as a district employee.
Huge discrepancy.
Huge discrepancy. And it's not like it does not make sense for schools who are spending public dollars to pay a contract company. And then as an OT, I think I made way less than what I thought I was going to. And I think a lot of those contract companies, not that I'm, you know, bad mouthing, they got my foot in the door. I had to kind of suffer through the first year of that. But they give you this huge hourly rate. But what they don't tell you with school-based is that you don't get the hours that you need to make an actual good salary. So it's kind of like, oh, travel anywhere, do whatever. And then you're kind of like, that's not what I thought it was going to be, because the cut that they take is rather large.
Not to mention. Yeah. And the reason that I chose to go from contract gig into district also is because of the benefits. And a lot of contractors don't do that benefits. Yeah. You know, you might get with a contract agency, you might get a match in whatever you put into your 401k, you might get a little bit of a match there. But when you're a school-based employee, you're either part of whatever system that I mean, obviously, this is state dependent. You know, every state's a little bit different. But we have a pension. Yeah, I don't honestly, to be fair, I don't even know what all that will look like, you know, in 20 years when I'm ready to retire, 30 years. But I know it's there, and I know that it wasn't there. In the contract gig, I also know that my benefits are pretty darn good.
Right.
And so plus you're just in a district. You feel like you kind of have a secure position there. You're not going to have to worry about the district losing the contract and all of a sudden, you know, you're gone, because that's what's happening. Like I said, we're hiring one person. We're hiring a person to replace a contracted person. And that person found out a month ago that she's not going to have a job here. And, you know, starting January 1st, basically. And so now she either, you know, is she going to be able to go to another district, or is she going to go work in a clinic? You know, what's she going to do? So it's unfortunate, but districts are starting to see the financial benefit of having in-house employees.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's what I was thinking. And not only just for like the therapist and their own security, but then they also develop a relationship with the kiddos, with the teachers, with the school staff, with the administrators. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, we're stopping that contract and we're going to ship you off somewhere else. And the staffing company is like, hey, I'll fill your time. It's no big deal. But then that therapist and the kids and the families and the teachers and everybody else are just kind of SOL on that one. It's like, all right. And then they might bring in another very good therapist, but it's just a disruption.
I mean, I think staffing aid, they have their place for filling. Absolutely. Because there is a shortage. I mean, they have their place in filling difficult to fill positions. But for the OT, I would say just be very wary and ask a lot of questions when you go to work for a staffing aid. Like if you decide that that's the route you want to take, where you're going to do those things, do your research, do your homework on those agencies, ask a lot of questions, because you don't want to end up in a weird situation.
Absolutely. I mean, so one of the districts down here that, again, the district that I used to work for at the contracted agency, they have a strong, basically that contracted agency has been in that school district for about 10 years now. They have a full staff from the same agency of about, like, I don't know, 10, 15 therapists. Like, that's more secure. If you go into a school and you know, you like, they almost work for the district because that's how close they are. The contractor and the district are just so well knit. They have this like entire program set together, versus maybe you're getting a contract gig and you are there because someone's on maternity leave. Well, you need to know that, because that's not likely going to be a permanent position, you know? So you, like Abby was saying, you need to ask the questions, you know, what does my future look like here? What am I going to be here for 3 months or for 3 years, or what does it look like?
So I asked you guys what the best part of being a school-based OT is, but what is the worst part? Now that we're trying to get everyone to be in the district, now you're going to say, no, watch out.
There is no bad part. There's no bad part.
I feel like this
part.
Is that question. No, I feel like this is that job interview question that you have to like somehow turn into a positive. Like I'm a workaholic. That's the bad part. Like I work a lot.
I'm just a perfectionist.
I want it real. I want the dirt.
So
what makes you cry, Jason? Just kidding.
For me, right now, in my six, seven years now, I've never had a strong mentor in the districts I've been at. At least not an OT. I have found mentors, that are psychology. I did meet you, but all the OTs are very young. You know, OT has become a popular profession in the last 20 years or so, 10, 15, 20 years. And so everyone's young, it seems like. And so we're all kind of learning together. I know that there are some districts. My friend just got a job in a district down here. And she's like, oh, my gosh, I have two really well-experienced OTs. And, like, she's just learning as much as she can from them. But in my experience, I don't know, maybe I just haven't asked enough questions, but I haven't found, like, that really strong OT mentorship in the schools. And so we kind of had to learn it together, me and Abby. You know, we were the only two OTs. And
it wasn't always pretty.
it wasn't always pretty, but we got through it. We learned. We did our research. We kind of worked at it together. And like I started to say, we found mentors in other professions. We found psychologist mentors. We found our special ed director as a mentor, other teachers, special education and general education, principal.
Speech therapist.
Oh, definitely speech therapist. Yeah, so that was kind of the thing that I wasn't prepared for. But of course, it's kind of nice because we're getting to the time when we start to be mentors, and now we need to take that role on.
And I would say, I mean, I would definitely second that. I think when I took my first job in Hawaii, I remember walking into like a tiny office that was also a storage closet, and there was a tiny little table, and stacked on top of it was probably 40 plus files of student work without any notes, without anything. It was just work stuffed into folders. And I was kind of like a new grad, brand new grad. And I was thinking to myself, what do I even do with this? Like, I just have to start with like the first one and start finding these kids and figuring out where everybody was. And this was in 2008, not that, you know, not old. Ages ago. Not that it was like the dark ages, but like, I remember thinking like, oh my God, there was no SACE or like web IEP or anything that I was able to go and look up this information. I had to like somebody email me a spreadsheet, and I remember being like, oh my God, where am I going to find these kids and what am I going to do? And there was such a high turnover of staff at that place. Like every year there was a new therapist. And so every therapist did something different. And so there was no standard way of doing things. And so I just was left with whatever the previous OT did with the mess that she probably inherited. Yeah. And so I was just kind of like, okay, but I'm a new grad. And so I remember just writing God awful goals. Like I just certain things that I, oh God, flashbacks. Anyway. But I would say one of the most challenging things too, is just OT is new to schools. Like in the scheme of special ed is new even to schools. When you really look at when IDEA and everything started, the education system is always changing based on politics almost. And so it just constantly is changing, and whatever new thing comes out, you as an OT have to adapt to that. But even our role in schools is constantly changing. And so you're just always, well, that meeting went like this, and it's so gray, and there's no standard score that says they don't qualify for OTs. So you're always just kind of throwing your opinion in, and it's very difficult. It's extremely gray. And so kind of working within that gray area to provide services can be quite challenging, to say the least.
Yeah. And it's interesting because changing jobs within the school-based system, even if you don't change jobs, even if you just go to a new school in the same district, it can be so different. Everything changes. I mean, district to district, school to school, especially state to state, county to county, like you could be just going down the street and they do it completely different from the school that you were at, you know, a week ago. The referral process is different. The IEP's process completely different. The type of services that they provide is completely different. Do they provide RTI or mostly push in or pull out? Like it all changes. And so, you have to bring your professional, you know, your professional opinion, your professional, the research that you've done, all that good stuff. But just like any job, you have to work within the scope that the, I mean, basically that your employer provides.
Right.
And so you got to learn to adapt. And
that can be challenging. I'm almost thinking too, like you have to be careful sometimes of what you say in meetings. Like even it's like, oh, there's these little nuanced rules. They're like, oh, give your opinion, do this. And you're like, great. They're like, yeah, maybe word it this way. Like I was thinking, like I saw a kid and I suspected possible behaviors relating to difficulty with ocular motor skills. Well, then it's like, if you bring it up, are you recommending a vision therapy assessment? Oh, or then the district is now responsible for paying for that, even though it's kind of more of a medical issue. And then you're kind of like, but I see this problem and the kid has all these attention issues and now they're being, you know, prescribed medication for depression issues because their self-esteem is tanking because they can't attend. But I see this issue that could also attribute to this. And so it's kind of like, sometimes I end up just saying it anyway, and then I can get into trouble for that because, you know, did you talk to the school nurse and they want to know that you did all these routes, but there's nothing written in stone like, hey, OT, if you suspect this, do X, Y, and Z, and this is the protocol. It's just these nuanced subliminal things that you're just kind of like, you get in trouble for after the meeting. Yeah. Like, hey, maybe you should have talked to the school nurse and they tell the parent, and you're just like, oh, well, I didn't know that until I got in trouble for it.
Right. And real quick, I think Abby was kind of getting to this, but no one in schools know what OT is.
No, they don't.
And so that's another difficult part of being an OT in schools is that, like, if someone knows what OT is, typically it's from a medical-based model. It's from their dad having some sort of surgery and receiving OT in the hospital or something like that. There's occasions, of course, where you know, the gen ed teacher has a student with a specific learning disability who receives some OT, and so they kind of get it. But even then, it's like, you're the handwriting and pencil grasp specialist. Yeah, you know, they don't know what occupational therapy is. I actually had it. I got a response. It was like, really? When I told a teacher, I was like, well, you know, there's some planning, organizational and planning difficulties going on with this student. I can work on, you know, how they can organize their work. And they're like, you can do that? I was like, yeah, that's an occupation. That's part of a meaningful occupation that the student needs in order to access his school curriculum. So, yeah, I don't mind working a little bit on that. I'm like, oh, okay. Sounds good to me. And so, yeah, I mean, part of what we have to do as school-based OTs, and I think any OT has to do, is advocate for who we are, what we can, and also sometimes what we can't do. But let teachers, let parents, let students know how we can help them.
That's huge. I absolutely love that. And I feel like the whole time I was like nodding my head because I'm like, yeah, like I'm going through that exactly in the same realm, except again, it's like it's parents or something like that. Like there's the systemic problem of what you can and can't do within your setting. But then it's also the understanding or that lack of understanding that the other people that you're engaging with have about what you do. And that's, yeah, tough topic.
But it seems like it goes across a lot of practice settings. Oh, yeah. Like I think OT, we're just inherently a gray profession, which makes it difficult to define. And then also makes it difficult to advocate in like a real way. Sometimes it's like the beauty and the curse of being an occupational therapist. Like that's kind of how I look at it. It's like, oh, this is a beautiful profession. It's also a curse because you're just trying to define something that is defined by other people's ability to find meaning in life. Like it's a very weird profession, but awesome. Awesome.
But how are we? We are so like no one knows what we do. Yet we are consistently the top five jobs like in the world.
I think we were number four on something just like a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we're number like four in the medical field and in the top 10 within like all jobs in the United States. Yet no one knows who we are, what we do, because we can't be case carriers. And that's one thing,
that's true.
One of those things. And apparently apparently there are a few states where an OT can be a case carrier. I learned this very recently. There's only like four states or something like that where this can happen. But there are a lot of, you know, there's a lot of those kids that are in gen ed that are just something's off with them and they won't qualify for special education because their academic levels are too high. Okay. But they just can't organize to save their lives. They have no interest in any PE because they are the most uncoordinated kids in the world. And so, yes, they participate, they access, but
they're taking like the hard road.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it's kind of like, yeah, or like, how long do we have to wait? Like, how badly do they have to continue to struggle? Yeah. And that's the, because I can think of a couple students like this too, where it kind of broke my heart, where it's like, they don't qualify for anything by the definition of special ed and services and OT and PT because they're meeting standardized assessments. But you can see them struggling in class and they're getting further behind, but it's low and it's like progressing over years. And you're just watching it slowly slip down. And meanwhile, they're being included in the gen ed population, but they're also being ostracized, not just by their peers, but even staff. And they're not meaning to ostracize them. I don't want to make it sound like anybody knowingly was like picking on a child, but you can see where they're being just like slowly segregated away from their peers while still in the classroom. They're just sitting at a table way in the back by themselves or something. And it's like, oh, you can see that their disability is impacting them in gen ed, but there's nothing available. They're just kind of like flipping through the crack. Mm-hmm. And no 504 plan, no anything will really. And that's where I see a gap where OT could fill a role. Like, if we could just coach the teacher a little bit more, or, hey, this is what their disability is. This is how it's going to impact them. This is how you can support them to function. And so that they're not sliding back until they're completely segregated and going to RSP. And you know what I mean? And not that those things aren't needed, but you know what I mean.
And for the school-based therapists out there, I just want to say real quick, I think that we need to do a better job at the end of our reports in giving not only – because every time you go into an IEP, the parent, the advocate, the lawyer, whoever – I mean, even the special education teacher – the first thing they do is they looked at the back page to see if he qualified for OT. So it doesn't matter what you say in the first eight pages or however many pages you have, but on that last page, that's the page that everyone wants to look at. But we don't do a good job at putting recommendations that aren't necessarily services. Like Abby was just saying, you know, yeah, maybe that kid doesn't need OT, or maybe he doesn't qualify for any other services, so he can't get OT. Mm-hmm. But we can still recommend different things to the teacher. And potentially, depending on the school district, follow up with that teacher to make sure that they understand those different concepts. That doesn't necessarily need to be a service on the child's IEP. That can be more like kind of an RTI level 3 type of thing, or potentially a 504, SST, whatever your school is using. So, but again, the school districts don't know that we can do that. And so they just want us to say whether or not the kid needs help with handwriting, sensory processing difficulties, or cutting skills.
But don't you feel like that kind of goes back to, Abby, what you were saying of like, if you make a recommendation, if a recommendation is coming from an occupational therapist, that means they need therapy to address that. So it's like, I'm not saying I agree or disagree with what you're saying. Like, it's just like, if you say they need this, well, you're saying that. So clearly they need OT.
Yes and no. So IDEA, you know, tells us that the California state guidelines, at least, and most of the states have guidelines. If you haven't seen your guidelines, you can head over to otschoolhouse.com/guidelines, I think. And we have a little clickable map.
That is true. The clickable map is helpful.
Yeah. So we'll send Sarah a link to that.
That was supposed to be for later. But,
oh, sorry. Anyways.
You can do it now. It's your show. We're good.
No, but you need to look at your guidelines, because our guidelines for if a kid needs occupational therapy is there someone else on the IEP team that can provide that specific accommodation or service. Right. And so if we can put into our recommendations, yes, this child needs organizational folders by different color. That's not necessarily saying that we have to do that. That's saying that the IEP team, the teacher, the parent, the RSP teacher, whoever else might be involved can work on that. Like, I'm sorry, but if I was a parent in a meeting and someone told me, oh, my recommendation is for you to put colored folders for the kid to organize, I'd be like, okay, I can do that. Like, I don't need someone to come help me do
it's
that.
It's a skilled intervention at that, like, at that basic bottom line.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so that's the, I mean, that's a whole another story concept that we could go on. You know, what have you asked the parent? Have they already tried using colored folders? Okay. Well, maybe if they've already tried it, then maybe, okay, maybe there's something more that we can do.
I love it. I just like ask one question and then you guys just like banter back and forth. It's fantastic. I'll just sit there and I'm like, this is awesome. And
so it wasn't our office. Oh,
I'm sure. I like, if I could have just been like a fly on the wall there and just listen and watch and like what's going on. But I should also point out that it's super cool to have both of you guys on, because I know on your show, you tend to do at least the interviews, just one of you will do each interview. And then sometimes you'll reconvene and then do shows together. So
Now that we know how to do three people on a call,
maybe we'll look into it. Yeah.
Life changer.
Or we might end up just bantering between each other and then
nothing wrong with that.
Done.
We'll have to see how many people we can get on one podcast.
It's like how many you can fit in the car or something. Yeah.
OT podcast dinner party. Done. Like just
great idea. So let's see. Let's go. I want to go back a little bit more into your guys' backstory. And Abby, I know you were sharing a little bit about how your family was all sorts of different people or different professions, I should say, that are all somewhat relatively intertwined with OT. But how did you guys, or when or how, like how did OT pop into your realm, into your space?
Mine was my dad. I wanted to be an artist. I'm not even going to lie. Like I was like, I'm going to go to art school, and I still paint and draw, and I still do a lot of things more as like a hobby based. And I still incorporate as many art projects as I can into therapy, probably selfish reasons. No, just kidding. If it doesn't benefit the student, I don't do it. I'd be child centered first. But no, and my father was just kind of like, hey, I think you should look at anything other than art school because you won't make any money and that's really expensive and you're going to be taking out student loans and you got to pay those back someday. So a very practical man in my life, my dad, just like look at something else. So then I went to the guidance counselor and I remember like looking like at psychology and social work. And then eventually I saw occupational therapy and I had no clue what it was. And I was a senior in high school and I was just kind of like, I don't know what this is. And it was like ticking down, getting closer to the spring and I hadn't like applied anywhere. So my dad had a friend who was an OT, but was now like running a hospital. He also had like a hospital administration background. So he got me in to shadow an OT for a day. And she had this little girl with cerebral palsy. And she had her on a therapy ball and she was doing stamping, like making an art project with potatoes that they had cut little stamps out of. And she had her over this therapy ball and she was working on strengthening and extending her arm and putting it on a piece of paper that was taped to the wall. And this little girl was just super excited to do this because she couldn't hold a paintbrush. She couldn't do it. The potato was like big enough. And the OT was explaining to me kind of like what all was being worked on. And it was in a clinic. And I saw that and I was like, oh, I could do this. This seems really cool. And she also did like some work with, it was this weird rural hospital where she had this outpatient clinic. So she had kids coming in, but she also had like a truck driver that had rolled his truck over his arm and she was doing wound care for him and like shoulder rehab. So it was just this crazy experience just seeing her for a day go from like the truck driver to the little girl to like another kid that came in for sensory integration therapy with her assistant. Like it was just these weird things. And so I thought, oh, I think I could do this. This seems cool. So I applied to a program and got in and
never looked back.
Well, sometimes I look back. Well,
sometimes.
Sometimes I'm like, you know, don't maybe I'll go back and get another degree or whatever.
That's looking forward.
Yeah. But that's how I fell into it. Cool. I like it. Not bad. It's not a bad profession.
No, not at all.
That's pretty good.
Living life to the fullest.
Putting the fun in function.
Yes.
All right. Same question, Jason.
All right. My turn. So coming out of high school, I was in my elective all 4 years, or one of my electives all 4 years was animation. And so that's what I was actually big on was I really wanted to do computer animation. It's like a huge Pixar fan, love Disney, all that good stuff. And so that's honestly what I thought I was going to do. My sister, so I graduated in high school in 2006. My sister became an occupational therapist in 2004, 2005. And so actually it was through my sister that I learned about occupational therapy. And so I graduated from high school, didn't know where I was going to go to college, ended up going to a JC junior college down here in Southern California for 2 years. And I took a mixture of, like, I was interested in psychology. So I did take some psychology, sociology classes. And then I also took animation classes and film classes, actually, too. So I kind of didn't know which way I was going to go. And then but I did know I wanted to go to USC. And looking at USC, they had the number one film school. And they had the number one, at the time, OT program. So I was like, well, I can't go wrong. Either way, I can do either one. So I don't think I really decided until basically I got accepted to USC is when I really knew that I was going to go the OT route. And partially kind of like Abby, I'm a very sensible person. And like your dad.
I'm not sensible.
Like your dad.
My dad is sensible.
Like your dad. And going to USC, you know you're going to have student loans to pay. So,
a little bit.
I mean, that wasn't the only thing. I had, like I said, my sister was an OT, so I had put in several, I know it sounds like a lot, but hundreds of hours at a clinic in Pasadena. And I had, which is a sensory integration type of clinic, and I'd volunteered there during their summer clubs. I was going in once a week, twice a week for a full day to shadow and help out there. And so I got a lot of experience there. I enjoyed seeing the progress that the students made. And so I ended up kind of going that route at USC. And yeah, so I didn't think I was going to be school-based at all. I thought that I was going to be I thought I was either going to be clinic-based. I never did a school-based rotation. So I did one at the VA. I love the VA. That was so cool. In fact, I don't know, one day if I ever get tired of school based, that would be something that I would look into, is working at the Veterans Affairs. Such a just an awesome place to be.
Shout out to the OTs that work at the VA, because they are right up to some crazy, like just amazing programs and different things that they are setting up and running over there. It's like fantastic. Sorry, had to jump in.
Yeah, it's really cool.
No joke. No. I mean, they got driver rehab, they got a lot of stuff going on, and they're and they have, they're often in with the research studies too. They do some of the research studies, so that's super cool. But yeah, I love acute rehab, just like how quick paced it is and all that good stuff. Hey, go figure, my sister's calling me right as I'm talking
right
about it.
Yeah, right. We should ask her a question.
Yeah, all this true, can you confirm?
Anyways, that's kind of, I found out about OT through my sister and kind of fell in love with it myself, kind of going through that, seeing what she did and seeing how much of a difference she was making with the kids that she got to work with. And I got to shadow and again, work with those kids and see them work into developing their own obstacle courses and learning how to do all those different self-care skills within the clinic. And it was just super cool. So
I think it's really fascinating because, like, there were so many similarities with both of your stories for me. But it's funny because, like, the only experience that I had with OT before I started applying and got into school was school-based. Like, no joke.
You're not in school-based.
Yeah, you had mentioned that.
Jason, you're like, oh, I had hundreds of hours. I probably had five. Like, 5 hours, and that's it, maybe.
You can't do that now. Like, the OTs that are applying have to have, like, 40 plus hours.
Yeah, 80? I remember
when
80.
I applied to
80
or 100.
Oh, you had to have 80?
No.
I remember
now they have to have 80.
Because I had, because I went to Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania, which actually is a very good program. Nobody knows about it because it's very small. But
almost
shout out to Gannon. Yeah. No, we have the same school colors.
We do.
We'll tell them to listen to you guys. I was just on their podcast, but we talked about Gannon a little bit. So.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You were on OT Schoolhouse because you were like, oh, I heard of Gannon in Florida. And I was like, you know what? They just opened a campus down there. That's fine. Yeah. But yeah. And I had to do 40 hours of observation of an OT before I was accepted completely into the program. I just went back to the same OT that inspired me to be an OT. Like, hey,
I need
you know what I think is interesting is And I wonder if it's different now for people entering into OT programs, but all of us kind of found OT through another route. Like, I didn't deliberately seek out to become an occupational therapist. Occupational therapy kind of found me. Like, it's kind of how I think of it in a weird way. I was seeking many other professions. And then I was like, huh, this seems kind of cool. And I wonder, I know a lot of OTs that I graduated with similarly found OT programs. They weren't like, oh, I'm looking to become an occupational therapist specifically. It's kind of like, oh, it found me and now I'm making my niche in OT.
Yep. And aren't we glad that it found us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mostly, most times.
Yeah, right. Except when there's back boogers involved.
99% of the
Except
time.
For back boogers. Although I do like it. Kids spitting out his food to come play with me. Good day.
It's a good
means I'm doing something right.
So, like, reflecting on kind of all your experiences and where you guys have come from and where you are now, what would you say makes you an awesome OT?
I think it's our or at least for me, I think Abby kind of has the same desire, is the desire to learn more, because like, you never know everything. And I mean, even though we have this website and a lot of people come to us for resources, like, we're learning as we go. We are finding out. We're researching. We're getting more information from the likes of Sarah and from other people who help us. And then we kind of share that information. No joke. Like,
yeah.
And so I think it's really cool to go to conferences. Unfortunately, you know, they're expensive. You can't go to them all the time. And so listening to podcasts, going online to different websites, especially that are in your area of practice, I think that's what probably makes me a good OT, is that I'm willing to seek out the answers and I'm willing to find the information.
Definitely. And I would say too, like, when you're feeling burnt out, like for me, I was starting to feel a little run down as a school-based OT. Well, just in general, you're just kind of like, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I think doing things like OT Schoolhouse and podcasts and having that
occupational life balance.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what? What was that?
I occupational missed. Life balance.
That's right.
I'm working on it.
What is this thing called? Balance?
Yeah.
What is this thing?
A balance beam?
A balance beam? I can step on those little toadstool things pretty well. No, but I think it helps me expand my toolbox. So, and then it becomes more interesting. And so then the kids that I work with, it becomes more interesting. And I think the more you podcast, like I was thinking of like Robert Constantine. That OT for, it was like all these light bulb moments. And now I'm like approaching kids and I started doing more research and I'm just like, oh my gosh, now I'm more motivated again to get back into things. And so I think, what was the question?
What makes you a good OT, Abby?
Thanks, Jason.
That's what makes me a good OT. like just trying to like use what I'm working on to better myself. That's where I was going with that.
It's okay. Don't you even worry about it.
Don't even edit that out.
Oh, no.
That's like daily. That's how my mind functions. I'm like, what was I thinking?
Yeah. I think our ability to ramble on just makes us a great OT. Like, we just keep on going. It's just
that,
just
that
ramble.
Is OT. Have you ever, like, read AJA or, like, OT? It's pretty much just a lot of articles about life. And so you got to be a student of life, I guess.
Yeah. So I have a true story. I have to let you guys in on a little secret here. And now it's not going to be a secret anymore.
Please.
But
please let us know.
We're going to get real here. So like, you know, I used to work in the schools and I loved it. I loved working in the schools for a portion of time. And I think it was burnout. I think it was a lot of the systemic issues. I think a lot of the things that we were just talking about, some of those hard realizations of being a school-based OT, and it pushed me out. And I ended up ditching the schools. And a lot of my friends, they're still school-based OTs and they love it. And I was just like, I was very kind of just disheartened by it because of everything that I had kind of gone through. And listening to your podcast actually has made me be like, oh, but I did like school-based therapy. It is fun. Like, there are things that you guys are talking about, and I'm like, I remember that. Like, that was so good. Yeah. So even, like, this just goes back to what you guys were saying. Like, I listen to you guys talk about it, and because you guys are passionate about it, I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Like, I like it.
I yeah.
Well, that's nice. That's
I think cool. It's kind of like, but I noticed in OT, any place that I went, like nursing homes, home health, hospital, I got so bogged down with the systemic issues. And at some point, I just had to take the little wins. Like, I will ride that high from that kid spitting out his food to come hang out with me for like 4 treatment sessions and probably like 6 bad IEP meetings. Because because in those moments, in those meetings, there's, you know, and I realized too, like, I can only own my own stuff. Like, I can't, the parent's going to come in, their advocate's going to come in, they're all going to have their own stuff sitting at that table. The teacher's going to have her own stuff, and the administrator's going to be dealing with the pressures of their stuff. And so I can only deal with like the little microcosm that is occupational therapy in that meeting. And my burnout was stemming from wanting to manage everybody else's stuff yeah. and please everybody at the table. Like, okay, I got to keep admin happy. I got to make sure that the teacher's happy. I got to make sure the parent and the advocate are happy. And if you do that every time, holy smokes, like, you will get burnt out way fast. And so I just started being like, no, you know, I'm going to focus on the treatment sessions and like what the kid's doing today. And at that meeting, I'm going to give the best representation I can of what I think OT is doing and what we're benefiting the student with. And that's all I can do. And, you know, those are my recommendations. And here you go. This is all I can offer. I've done my best.
Right. But it's healthy. You got to do, yeah. do you.
Oh, but if you don't, you'll drive yourself crazy, which I have. I've conversations in my mind. I've like practiced and rehearsed things. Like, it's just not good. But I think if you can try to like frame it like that, you get less burnout.
Yeah. And I
try.
I
mean, doesn't always work.
And we haven't really talked about it yet today, but the caseloads in schools, everyone complains mm-hmm. about the high caseloads.
It's too high.
And, you know, it's tough. And inherently, as OTs, as human beings, we don't want to let anyone down. We especially don't want to let the kids down. And we want to get every session in. And so every time we go to an IEP, we feel terrible because we're missing therapy sessions. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that I have to help myself get through it is to remember that it's not necessarily my fault. I am doing a job that this district is hiring me for. It is not my fault that I am at an IEP instead of seeing 3 kids. Mm-hmm. I will make up those sessions when and if I can. And if I don't, you know what? I'm sorry, but that means I need help. Mm-hmm. And that is the school district's fault, not necessarily my fault. And of course, I'm not saying that there aren't times that it's my fault or that it is my fault, but I feel like that's one of the things that often leads to burnout, is feeling like you can't get everything done.
Yes. Yeah.
And you got to remember that the school district doesn't always put you in a place to get everything done. And so if you don't get everything done, you can't put it all on yourself. And you need to send out those emails and say, hey, I have 25 missed sessions, you know, in the last 3 months. And I'm sorry, but I was in IEPs. Here's my calendar that shows exactly what I was doing for the last 3 months. And as you can yeah. see, the only time to see kids was when school was out.
That doesn't work.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they don't take it. A lot of schools are completely resistant to moving to workload. They want to stay caseload. And an 8-hour day is only 5.5 hours because mm-hmm. of lunch, and school's only in session and recess. And
then you have to hope the kid's there.
That's yeah. true. Yes, yes. So
there's not yeah. assemblies or whatever.
There you go.
Field trips.
And not to mention, how many schools are you at? I mean, I'm at 3 schools now, and that isn't a lot of OTs are at a lot more schools than that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we want to put all the blame on ourselves for things that happen in the school district, but we have to remember that we're in a system, and systems can be good and systems can be not so good in various different realms. And so Yeah, you just gotta, you know, you can't put all the fault on yourself when something comes to missed sessions or good or bad reports or how many pages your report is. Like, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, you got to know that you're doing what you can for as many students as you can.
And I am, like, just listening to what you were saying, like, I'm so happy that you guys decided to do a podcast and specifically focus on school-based occupational therapy, because I think there are so many just unique perspectives and unique things that are happening within that realm. And, like, just as you were talking, Jason, I'm like, yeah, like, everyone needs to hear this. Like, anyone that's in schools needs to hear that sometimes it's not your fault. Most of the time, it's not your fault. Mm-hmm. Most of the times, you have mm-hmm. way more kids that you have to see and all these other things that are being unloaded on you, dealing with the mounds of paperwork from the therapists that were there previously, or you have teachers that are shuffling in and out. You have substitute teachers that you're trying to deal with. And I mean, mm-hmm. every day is different. Every minute is different, and you're always constantly shuffling something around to do the best work that you can do. And I feel like through your podcast, you guys are able to reach so many people and say, like, hey, it's okay. We're all learning. We're all going to get through this together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And here are some strategies. Here are things that we've worked with. Like, here are some challenges that we're facing. What do you guys have? Like, what can you share with us?
Yeah. As well?
Yeah. And that's the whole point of the podcast, honestly, is to kind of, we are not self-proclaimed experts in school-based therapy. Like, that is not what we're saying. I mean, Abby's been in it slightly longer than I have, but we really haven't been OTs a long time, and we haven't been in school-based a long time.
We're just trying to be better.
Yeah, we're just trying to get better. We're trying to help others. And we understand that school-based OTs, like, don't have that mentorship. They don't have people to bounce ideas off of a lot of the times. And so we're trying to give school-based OTs. What we do have at school-based OTs is a lot of time in our cars to listen to podcasts. So that's what we take advantage of. That's our strength in the IEP that we're kind of going for. And yeah, so we're just trying to, you know, let people know that we're here and ask people questions and give some people our opinions and ask people their opinions. So
whose idea initially was it to start the podcast?
Jason's.
I think so.
Yeah, the podcast was definitely your idea, I believe.
How? Why? Where did that come from?
Honestly, I think it was because it was like what I just said. We wanted a mentor and we didn't have a mentor. And one of the things that we would always get invited to meet with our county, basically, or not our county, even like our district or whatever in Southern California of school-based therapists, but it was down in Riverside and we were up in Victorville, Adelanto. And so we couldn't, it was in like 12:30 in the afternoon on a Tuesday. It's like, who can make it to 12:30 on a Tuesday, 40 miles away, you know?
Yeah.
And in LA, that's a big difference.
Oh, gosh. Definitely.
And I think too, that was interesting because I grew up and went to school on the East Coast, and he was schooled on the West Coast. And so just even me being in at like sharing the office, we, between the two of us, had debates over how to approach certain treatment ideas, mainly sensory integration. Like, I was not real keen on that. And I remember, like, just we would have these debates, and it was really interesting because I gained a lot of knowledge from Jason. Yeah, we both, like, just from having different opinions and interactions and discussions about it. And so originally we didn't do a podcast. It was just kind of a blog. Kind of thing. And it was just going to be like a resource site. And then Jason was like, you know, this would be really good as a podcast. And there's not a lot of podcasts. And so it was just, there wasn't any actually. Yeah. And so it was kind of like, ooh, that's pretty cool.
And then And I think both of us too, because we lived or we didn't live. I lived about an hour from work, an hour and 15.
Ouch.
Yeah. And when there was snow on the ridge or a fire on the ridge, it was like a 4-hour drive. And so
like, you have to go through like Moreno.
You have no ideas. I know you listen to a lot of podcasts, Sarah, but I had 4 hours almost a day. Well, not quite. Like, basically driving time to listen to podcasts. And so we both, Abby and I loved.
Yeah. Well, and similarly, I used to do home health. When I first moved out to Barstow in the high desert, I did home health, but I went all the way to Palm Desert, Yucca Valley, Joshua Tree from Barstow.
A long ways.
all the way down to Redlands and San Bernardino. I was all over the place. So I was always listening to podcasts and I was like, hmm. So anyway, both podcast fans.
Okay. So Jason, you had the idea. You approached Abby with it. And since Abby, you had been listening to podcasts, you were like, all right, no big deal. Like, let's try it out. You weren't just like, what? That's a crazy idea.
I was thinking, that sounds awesome. Because I think at that point, we didn't have that big of a following on the blog that right?
No,
it was like, we were only getting a little bit of traffic. And
yeah,
it was like, how do we reach people in a different way from other OTs? Because a lot of OTs do blogs and have websites. And so it was kind of like, how do we reach other school-based OTs in a format that's going to be for them? And Jason was definitely on board with the podcast. Yeah. Like, he liked podcasts.
We also like the idea that, well, personally, I'm not a very good typer, writer, anything that has to do with putting words on paper. And so I'd rather, but I'm a great talker. I like to talk. So kind of goes well with a podcast. But also one of the things that we kind of wanted to do, and we're doing a little bit now, is to make professional development more accessible. Mm-hmm. And so we are dabbing into that with the podcast a little bit, is providing professional development. We are allowing any occupational therapist to basically listen to our podcast completely free, just like 99% of podcasts are, through Apple, iTunes, or podcast app, or whatever app they use.
I use Overcast. I'm a new convert to Overcast. I just switched like a week or two ago. So trying something a little nifty, all right. a little different.
So, but anyways, yeah, so we're trying this whole new thing. You know, you can listen to our podcast completely free. And if you would like to actually earn some professional development for listening to our podcast, because we do often have specialists on our podcast, or Abby and I, we do some research and we do enough research that we feel comfortable that the information that we're giving you is valuable and is valid. And so we do feel comfortable in providing that continuing education or professional development certificate. And so after you listen to the episode, you can go onto our website. You can pay a small fee that allows to basically say, I listened to the podcast. You take a short quiz, which basically proves that you listened to the podcast. And then we send you a certificate of completion. Yes, we have, as school-based therapists, we often have December off or part of December, and we had the summer off. But AOTA conferences and state conferences always seem to be like in October and in April.
Prime IEP.
Yeah. Prime IEP months. You're like, exactly. Oh, great. This week I have 10 meetings.
Yeah. So we wanted to make, you know, some professional development a little more accessible. We hope to also eventually do some courses on the website, you know, more video courses that are more in depth and longer. And but for now, the podcast, that's kind of where we're headed with the podcast right now. It's kind of having that professional development.
I think that's so cool. And I remember you guys talking about that because we had met at OTAC, the Occupational Therapy Association of California conference, 2 months ago?
October.
Yeah, end of October. Yeah, something like that.
Feels like we've known you all our lives, right? Sarah.
And you guys were talking about the professional developments, and I was like, that is awesome. Like, that's so cool because, A, it's free, which is fantastic to listen to the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's convenient because people can be doing it when they're going for a run, when they're driving in their car, when they're washing dishes, walking their dog, something like that. And I think I know a lot of people struggle to get their CEUs done. And so it's such a wonderful way to be able to bring that to people, but then also to build that community. And you guys are learning and you're helping all these other people within the school-based realm. And even those of us that aren't in there, I'm still listening and I love hearing what you guys have to say. And I think that's such a, it's so cool.
Yeah. And it's new. I mean, as far as I know, we're the only people doing it right now. I can imagine it kind of getting bigger. I don't see why it wouldn't. It's cool that we're able to do that. And I hope that we're able to continue doing that for a long time.
And I think it's fun. And I think, you know, school-based OT, we're on our own a lot. And there's not a lot of, like we were talking about before, there's just so many differences across states, even districts, and what we're doing. And so kind of having that conversation and bringing that to other school-based OTs to form those connections, I think is really important to kind of getting all OTs on the same page and just being evidence-based in schools in general.
And that, and I'm sure, Sarah, you probably have experienced similar joys of this, of the podcast experience, is that one of my goals is to interview a school-based OT from every single state. And like, I kind of want to do that as a summer project and just be like, every state, tell me about what a school-based OT look like in Oregon? What a school-based OT look like in Texas? But even further than that, like, we've gotten emails from someone in Macau, China, that emailed us and asked us about school-based OT questions.
Awesome.
It's like, what? And then, you know, I'm sure you have a podcast, you know, kind of some of the things that you get to see behind the works, and you get to see that people in Australia are downloading your podcast. People in the UK are downloading your podcast. And you're just like, your mind is just blown. You're like, people are listening to me. Like, why the heck are people listening to me? And so that's one of the, probably I'd say the top thing that about running a blog, running a podcast, having an online presence, being part of the Facebook groups, even, you know, it's just like you get to meet people from all over the world. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It, that for me as well, like, best part, hands down, it's just getting to meet people, getting to connect with people. And even if, like, you guys are fantastic and I love that I've gotten to connect with you guys, but then also like the guests that you guys bring on, I'm like, wait, who's that? Oh, I want to hear more about that. Like, oh, that person sounds fascinating. And it's just like a constant wealth of information of people and stories and connections. And I mean, I'm a podcast junkie too, so I love it.
Yep.
So, and real quick, I mean, I don't know. For any, this is a general question. I'm not going to ask Sarah to answer this question, but like, have you ever felt just like you went to a podcast or two, you paid $300 to go to this all day long course or something like that, and just like you get there, you're there for 6 hours, and then you kind of leave like, oh, I kind of really already knew all that stuff, and you know, or you just didn't get out of it what you wanted. And I think there might be, in the long term, a shift in professional development, because I think there's starting to become so many courses that people are paying so much money for that they're underwhelmed with. Yeah. And that's part of the reason that we chose to do the podcast the way that we do and earn professional development the way that we do, because we don't want you to pay us even, you know, $10 is what we're charging as of right now for about an hour worth of professional development. But honestly, if you don't feel like you got $10 worth of information out of the podcast that you listen to completely for free, then I don't want you to pay for that.
Right.
Like, I want you to be like blown away, feel like you're getting your money's worth, feel like you're getting information. And that's why we're going to continue bringing on like awesome guests, because I mean, most OTs present at conferences like for free. Yeah. I mean, you don't get paid to present at OTAC or AOTA or something like that.
So
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, they don't, you still have to pay. Even if you're a presenter, you have to pay to be there. So, of course, unless you're like the keynote, of course, but anyways, you know, so we just want access for everyone to have access to these brilliant therapists, because to be fair, we're all trying to help people, right? And so we all need to have access to the same information so that we can help kids. So that's what the podcast is for school-based therapists that want to learn more.
Well said, Jason. I have nothing to really add to that. Ditto.
I've been thinking about it a long time.
That was but that's exactly it.
I'm passionate about OT. I'm passionate. Like you said, I was film production before, so I kind of take this into – I have this podcasting about OT is like this perfect blend for me from occupational therapy and the film production world. Obviously, we're not using video, but eventually we'll get there.
I have a question for you guys, and like, this is something that I guess I didn't – I kind of knew getting into doing an OT podcast that it would be an issue, but – I'm starting to see it like more and more of an issue. I love podcasts and I've been listening to podcasts for a while, but a lot of people that I am interfacing with now and that I end up like talking about podcasts or telling them even about mine or somebody else's, they do not listen to podcasts.
Wow.
And
that's interesting.
Yeah. And so, like, I'm going to kind of throw one of my students under the bus, one of my previous students. But she told me, now we're good. But she told me that she had never listened to a podcast at all. Not like OT, nothing. Until I told her to go listen to an episode of Brock's at Occupied. I was like, you have to go listen to this. This is a fantastic episode. And she went and listened to it. And she was like, just so you know, like, that was the very first episode of a podcast I've ever listened to. And so I know that, like, all three of us were so passionate about it. And we listen to podcasts all the time. But how do we bridge the gap to get more OTs that don't necessarily listen to podcasts start listening? Because they're not going to be listening to us right now.
I would say one is just showing up and keep making podcasts. Mm-hmm. I would say two, podcasting is relatively new in the scheme of things. Relatively new. It's been around a while, but it's catching on. It's a hugely popular, growing
entity.
What am I trying?
Yes. Platform.
Oh, that's a good word. Platform. Platform.
Media
Thank
platform.
You.
Yeah.
So I think that it's just a matter of, cause I didn't start listening to I take that back. I was listening to, podcasts when I worked in Hawaii, like 5-6 years ago, but I also was listening to like Audible, and I like books on, you know, I keep calling them books on tape, but essentially they're not on tape anymore. They're on my phone. Yeah. So I think I've always been a big fan of that, though, like audiobooks. And I consume, you know, I like listening to podcasts while I make dinner. I also am a big NPR junkie, so I'm big into talk radio. And I always have been. So I think people that automatically like that format will go with that format. But I notice more and more of my friends, particularly with like Serial. Mm-hmm. That was one thing. Like,
yeah.
One of my friends, that was the first podcast she listened to. And then suddenly it was like, oh, Serial. Now I got to listen to, most of it was true crime,
right.
My second passion. But I think that it's just a growing field. And once you get the bug, and there's something for everyone.
But I also feel like a lot of people that then listen to podcasts. So a lot of OTs that listen to podcasts don't listen to OT podcasts. So it's like,
oh, that's true.
We have one problem that OTs aren't listening to podcasts. Then we have another problem that OTs are listening to podcasts, but they're actually not listening to OT-specific podcasts.
So real quick, I just typed in podcast stats on Google. You got 64% of Americans have heard a podcast, 44% have ever listened to a podcast, and 26% listen on a monthly basis. But as far as what we can do, I think one is we can put it on every platform available. We now upload our podcast as Facebook videos so people can listen on Facebook. We have it on just about every single platform. So you can basically tell Alexa to play the OT Schoolhouse podcast. You can tell Google to play the OT Schoolhouse podcast. You can listen to
it. I'm going to use my grandparents when I go home at Christmas. I'm like, Alexa, play OT Schoolhouse podcast. See what happens.
I mean, putting it up on YouTube. I mean, like, people are searching YouTube for OT stuff. And so if they search that, they will find out, oh, hey, look, there is an OT for Life podcast. I didn't know about that. But they wouldn't search for it in the Apple Podcast app because they don't look for it there. But if it's on YouTube and they type in, you know, school-based OT onto YouTube or even onto Google, because YouTube's owned by Google, then even if you're just your podcast is an hour long, it's just a picture of something, they at least are now hearing, oh, hey, what's this? Mm-hmm. And where do I find out more about it? And so I think that's one way.
Oh, definitely. And I think the other part of it is OT is a broad field. And I think finding your niche with a podcast of a topic that is going to reach a specific audience is super important, because like as a school-based OT, I'm not probably going to listen to a podcast about acute rehab. But similarly, somebody in acute rehab isn't probably going to want to turn on a school-based OT podcast. Or like you're doing something totally different where you're kind of telling a story of OTs doing different things in different ways and what everybody's doing in the field. And so that reaches a wider audience. So that's kind of cool too. So it's kind of like figuring out where your place as an OT within that realm would be. And I think people will find it more interesting and be more apt to listen to them.
So I'm going to put you guys on the spot outside of your own. And we'll leave mine outside of it too, because I'm here too. What is your favorite OT podcast?
One of the ones that I appreciate because it's not school-based, but it's still with children, is the Milestones podcast. that is one that I have listened to regularly in the past. I don't listen to it as regularly anymore, but I also don't have as much driving time anymore, so I don't listen to nearly as many podcasts as I used to.
I actually have listened to the Milestones, the Occupied, and yours, but I have not listened to it on a regular basis, like I will admit. One that I have, but it's not by OTs, is the Inclusive Education podcast.
Yes.
That one I listen to pretty regularly, but that's by more school-based lawyers who are working on special education lawyers that are trying to keep kids included. And I found that really informative. So I guess mainly, like I said, that's
their special
their
special education podcast, because there isn't someone else out there talking about school-based OT. And like Abby was saying, you know, like it's kind of that niche.
Well, I was going to ask too what your favorite non-OT podcast is.
Oh, I'm lame.
I'm lame. Why are you lame?
I'm lame. Oh, I'll give you my like top three.
Top three? I said one.
just so you get a sense of what I listen to. But go ahead, Abby.
So I love Tara Brach. She does a lot of mindfulness and meditation podcasts. So she gives talks on just like mindfulness. It's much more like meditation, kind of how to be more aware of yourself and, you know, that sort of thing. Get your zen on. And then I love My Favorite Murder because I like true crime. And that's a really good one. And then I just recently started listening to The Armchair Expert. It's Dax Shepard interviews, a lot of really cool interviews in a long format. So I would say those are my major ones. But I also like This American Life, Freakonomics, Malcolm Gladwell's Revisionist History is really good. I'm a podcast junkie. Like I can say, I like the stories. I love stories, and I like anything with a good story or where they're interviewing an expert. And so that's kind of what inspires. I think OT Schoolhouse, we try and interview a lot of experts or who we think is an interesting story too.
Yeah. So sorry, I'm looking through my podcast, and one that I'm wanting to get hooked onto, but I haven't made the opportunity for myself to listen to a few of their episodes to get stuck on it, is The Sensory Project.
OT one. Yes, I did hear about that.
And I just haven't pressed play yet. So I'm sure that'll be a good one. I just haven't done it yet. My top three are probably one is only because I listen to it every week because I'm also a gymaholic, it's an EDM. It's called Tritonia. It's just an hour of EDM music. That's my gym music. But when that one's done, I actually have some finance ones that I actually listen to. Actually,
speak my language,
right?
Hopefully, we'll see.
Well, I dab a little bit in stock trading, so I will often listen to either Mad Money or Fast Money. Both are. Or CNBC programs. And then the other one that I would probably say is my top is Smart Passive Income, SPI.
I feel like you can learn a lot by asking people what podcasts they listen to, because most of those I don't listen to or have never listened to before. And so I was asking a question just out of curiosity, but then I actually started writing them down because I was like, okay, hold on. Like, I should probably check out some, if not all of these, because yeah, that's just fascinating. I feel like I have like this, like, it's like meeting the family, you know? It's like, what podcast do you listen to? Right. Oh, okay.
That's true.
It's true. Right? It is true. Abby and I would often go into the office and be like, have you listened to Serial yet?
Yeah, seriously. And I was going to say, I think I've been listening to Smart Passive Income podcast since their very first season. That was my first one. But then I was just kind of like, oh, I fell off the bandwagon for a little bit. And then I think it was Serial, and then that inspired my true crime passion. But I think podcasts are an amazing format. Like, it's just a really, and it's like an equalizer. You don't have to be some major continuing ed company. You don't have to be, you can just be a plain Jane OT with a mic and the sweet headset, and maybe not even sweet. I mean,
just a headset, okay?
Yeah, and an idea, and you just start reaching out to people, and it's just a really cool thing. It's like, oh, I can do this.
I always said, like, if just one person would listen to it, like, that's all I want. Of course, I'd love to have more people, but like if one person listened and got value out of the words that I was saying, that's it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no joke at all. And it is really cool, you know, when you have someone that pops up on into their Instagram story or something and say, oh, hey, I'm listening to the OT for Life podcast, the OT Schoolhouse podcast. Mm-hmm. Like, it kind of makes your day. You're like, oh, wow.
You're welcome.
Yeah, right.
I did that today.
Right? And you honestly, like, sweet. Yeah. Like, you get done working with a patient, you know, you're done, you get to your car and you kind of just look at your phone real quick and you're like, huh. That was a terrible session with that kid, but an OT listened to my podcast and got something out of it.
Yep. Or you read a review and you're like, that wasn't my mom or my best friend writing that. That was like an actual other therapist. I didn't pay them to do that.
Right. All right. I know we got to get going. I feel like we could just keep talking and keep talking.
We could.
But like I mentioned, I gave you guys the shout out today. Went back.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I went back. And I listened to episode 1.
Oh, gosh.
Because
what did we even talk about?
It was the
assessments.
Yeah. Writing, like, basically, like, how you guys go about it. Because I just think it's fascinating to listen to a podcaster after they've had a couple episodes. And then you go back and you listen to episode 1. And so I was like, I want to know where these guys started. And I wanted to know, like, what did you guys actually say in episode 1? So I listened to it today, and I have to tell you guys killed it. It was really? An amazing episode. Okay. Like, I was just sitting there, and I'm like, wait, this is their first one? Like, the audio was great. The content was great. I was like, I'm ready to go write a school-based report right now.
I can do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
I think that first episode, we had kind of already written up like a blog post about it. So like the research was done.
I'm pretty sure even though that was the case, I think we recorded basically a full episode and scratched it and redid that first episode.
Yeah, we did.
Because just turning a blog post into a podcast is not easy.
No. it's a different skill set.
Yeah.
And I think just learning to talk to each other. And not make it sound strange. Or like just even the intro was like, who's gonna talk first? You're gonna talk first, I'm gonna talk first.
Yeah.
That's not a natural thing at all. Like, it's very weird to start.
It took a good, you know, 7 episodes before I started getting used to my voice. Mm-hmm. It's the one thing, you know, working full time and trying to collaborate between 2 or 3 people to put an episode together. That takes time, and I applaud you because you're coming out with 1 to 2 episodes every week, and we're like struggling over here to get an episode out every 2 weeks, and it's tough. And everyone else listening, you should be very appreciative. See, now I can't talk. Appreciative of Sarah for what she's getting out on a continual basis, because it's awesome, and she's working full time on her own. I mean, you're self employed, right? You're doing everything on your own, and so. It's fascinating. It's amazing that you're able to get out a podcast while making that money over with your real clients. You know, that I'm sure you're giving 99% of your time to.
Yeah. Well, I can't take all of the credit because my husband does help me too. So thanks, Ray. Okay. All right. So my last question. If you only had one word to describe occupational therapy, what would it be?
That's tough. Yeah, is this Jeopardy?
right. Would you like it in the form of a question?
What is life? I mean, honestly, you can't really put it in one single word, I feel like. But that's tough. You got anything, Abby?
One single word?
One word. That's it. One of my guests that I just recorded with wanted 2. And I was like, no, you get one word.
Okay. I would say, oh gosh, it sounds so cheesy and Oprah when I think it though.
Just go with it.
Being.
Yeah. I was going to kind of say living or life. Kind of similar experience. But to be fair, I mean, we help a lot of people live. and I mean, of course you would say living to their fullest capacity, but if you're going to give us one word, being or living or some form of experiencing, maybe
occupied.
can't use the can't use Ocu. In...
Ocu? Is that a word on its own?
You can't use it's the word to describe what you're talking about.
Yeah, you can't use part of the word.
How, what is occupational? Occupation? No. I would say being.
Oh, man.
I love asking this question because what I find when I do these interviews, everybody has so much to say. There's so much to be said about occupational therapy. And then I get to the last question and everyone just stops. And they're like, I don't know what to say. Like, how do you put everything that we just talked about, everything that you've experienced, everything that you know, everything that you love about OT, how do you put it into one word? And everyone comes up with something different. And it's awesome.
Yeah, I don't like to conform to rules. This whole one word rule thing. No, yeah. Come on, Sarah. We can't describe occupational therapy.
I like it. I'm just kidding. I'm up for the challenge.
Right?
I like it.
So you got living. I've got – or no, you got being.
Yeah.
I've got living. Yeah.
Don't Those take her word. Those
are our final answers.
Final answer. Lock it in.
Final answer. I need another question.
All right.
I need a lifeline.
So
my button's broken.
So if people want to connect with you guys, learn more about you, hear you on a regular basis, what are your deets? Give your details.
All right. Well, I'll just give everything. I mean, otschoolhouse.com, that is our home base. That is where we live. You can find us there. Any social media, you can use at OT Schoolhouse and you'll get there. The OT Schoolhouse podcast is anywhere that you can listen to podcasts. Our emails are simply jason@otschoolhouse.com, abby@otschoolhouse.com. And I definitely want to extend for anyone listening to this one or potentially two episodes if it gets edited into that. If you're a school-based OT, a pediatric-based OT, and if you listen to our podcast and it speaks to you and you want to order a professional development opportunity from us, like you were talking about earlier, it's a quick quiz. Please reach out to us. We are more than happy to answer any questions. And also, for anyone, you can use OT for Life, LYFE, capital OT, the number 4, capitalized LYFE. We'll give you 20% off your first podcast episode, professional development at the OT Schoolhouse podcast. So, I think that – did I miss anything, Abby? Is there any other way that we get out there?
I mean, minus the typical OT in the sky bat signal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the carrier pigeons.
And the red phone I keep beside my bed. But otherwise.
I also want to say, if you are a student and you are thinking about career in school-based OT, that, yeah, not just practitioners, but anybody that is interested, or if you want to like switch careers or anything like that, because go check them out. They're awesome, great people. I am so honored to have had you guys on the show today. This has been so much fun. I just want to like keep going.
Mm-hmm. We could.
Right.
To the wee hours of the morning.
Anything else that you guys want to say before we go?
Just thank you. Thank you for having us on.
It's
very different being on the other side of the mic, I guess you could say, you know, not the one hosting, being able to express some thoughts to a different
I keep wanting to ask questions.
Right?
Right? Sarah, what is your one word for occupational therapy?
Ooh, I don't know if I can say that yet.
Oh, yeah. That's coming for episode number like 23. Yeah,
I think I have to wait.
It's going to be the big reveal.
It is.
Like your 100th episode.
Yeah. Because
are you going to just collect everybody else's words and put the first letters all together and create one big word to describe?
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. There we go. That's
so
my
what
word.
What I want to do.
I'm going to sound them all out.
I haven't done it yet. But what I want to do, and I don't even know like the right term for it, but like if you've ever been at a conference and they have it where you can like connect to the speaker and they ask questions and then it like pops up. Have you ever seen the ones with the words? And every time somebody says the same word, it gets bigger.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I have.
Thank you. Yeah. So I'd love to, down the road, I'd love to do that and get them to all start popping up and have that somewhere. I think that'd be cool.
I think that would be cool.
All right.
Yeah, I think that's everything.
Thanks, Sarah.
Oh, we got.
Awesome. So much fun, guys. Loved it.
Thank you for having us. Really appreciate it.
Okay, guys. Well, take care.
Thank you so much.
And we'll be in touch.
Have a good one.
All right.
For sure.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are three easy ways to let us know. One, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. Two, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. Three, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.
Oh, of course. I'm going to start. I was just going to start clapping before every recording, regardless. Yes,
we're exactly. All here. And we made it.
I just feel like that should just be a thing.
I kind of like it.
Welcome.
Yeah, every now and then.
I say that like I'm an occult member. Okay.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Every now and then, you're non-polite.
Thank you for joining us. Sounds really creepy. I hope we're recording all of this.
Oh, don't worry. We got it all. Cute hair, by the way.
Thanks. I had to let... Well, it's raining. There's like nothing done. And I'm growing... I used to bleach it and now I don't. And so I'm growing out all the nasty parts of it. So it just looks bad all the time at this point. Like I kind of have almost a mullet.
I'm waiting for Abby to answer.
Oh, see, I was waiting for you to answer.
Oh, okay. As far as school-based OT,
yeah, right?
And that's like, okay, that's a whole other conversation.
Schools,
yeah.
I'm just
Abby.
Kidding. Maybe we should edit this out.
No.
Crap, what was I just going to say? Oh, man. Dang it.
Uh-oh. Where'd they go?
I don't know. We were talking about the podcast.
Favorite podcast.
Yeah. I had a salad for dinner.
Oh, man.
No, that
I had something so good to say, and it just went poof.